Hello and welcome to The Good, the Scaz and the Rugby in partnership with our friends at Allianz. We've got the team in the studio. Everyone has made it through Christmas and the new year. Happy New Year, by the way.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Emily, what was Christmas like on the farm?
It was billed to be nice and big, and it turned out to just me, mum and dad, because my brother and his wife got COVID. My cousin got COVID. So we were a bit more separate than we'd hoped to be, but it was still really nice in a weird way. Obviously, I don't spend a huge amount of time with mum and dad anymore. So it was kind of nice not to have like all the fanfare. Do you know what I mean? It was just us three chilling at home. So that was kind of actually really nice.
Or did it involve just lying on the couch and mum doing everything?
Our mum does an amazing Christmas dinner.
Oh,
yeah.
And it was like, all for you, basically.
Basically, yeah. Although we did still, we shipped out plates to my brother and his wife. So we took, we delivered those.
Up the hill.
They're not far away, yeah. So we delivered. So they did really well because they didn't even have to cook or anything. They were just sat up there having a little bit of a cough every now and again.
Yeah.
Literally, delivery to your door. There we go. Christmas dinner. Boom, boom.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you?
Yeah, very good, actually. Plans got interrupted, but my mum and dad came, and my brother and his wife and their kids came down and did 4 days down with us. So that was great. I hadn't seen my mum and dad much or my brother. So it was great to just spend some time with them, with the girls spending some time with their cousins. And you know, then we ducked and dived around to see as many people from Zara's side as we could through the next 4 days as well.
Jeez, a Tyndall family Zara's reunion side, and then the Zara's royals. Side as
Zara's
well.
Side.
Yeah.
Also known as the Royals.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, it was great. I mean, we did Christmas Day up there and then jumped around to see a few of her cousins as well, so it was great.
Nice, very nice. And you, Elma? Obviously, you had a very special early Christmas present arrive.
Yes, my husband did make it over for Christmas, which was the Christmas miracle of 2021. It did actually happen. We had Christmas lunch in a local pub because
so the way forward now, isn't it?
Never done that.
I've never have to clean up. So with my mum and dad, because we did it early, so we did it on the 22nd. We got someone in to cook. And it was brilliant.
That is cheating.
Can we just go back to that? Sorry.
No cleaning up. No,
you didn't
nothing.
Go out, you
it was
got
the best
in.
Money ever spent. because there was Zara's brother as well and the girls and Zara's dad. So we then, we just got someone in to come and do it all. And they clean up and they do everything. Because we've got like a little, on the farm, we've got like a little barn we can do it in. So we can have it completely separate from your house so you get no debris.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing.
So good.
So good.
Jeez, you have life sorted. I thought going to the pub was genius, but that is next level. You brought the pub home.
Yeah.
And as a South African, I didn't realize this. Christmas is a pub at the pub is very fancy. I don't know if it was just this pub, but the food, it wasn't just and your average
trimmings.
Pub fare, it was brilliant. So I did feel like I wanted to support the local hospitality industry because when I spoke to them, they did also say that, look, they had loads of cancellations. So it's fine if you need to cancel, like we understand it's this time of the year, everyone started getting COVID. And then we managed to go and we actually had a large section of the place to ourselves.
So good.
Amazing.
But brilliant. We did spend New Year isolating, though, because if you didn't have it over Christmas, you had it over New Year.
You couldn't have both, could you?
No.
Dear.
Most people were in for New Year's this year, weren't they, anyway? People weren't going too wild. Well, not from what I've heard, anyway. Tids is looking up. Give me a bit of side eye, like, what?
What? Yeah, no, very quiet.
Whatever.
Maybe.
Okay, so we were all pretty much back to work over the last week. You guys have been like just knocking out the big guests on The Good, the Bad, and the Rugby. Just like,
yeah. Well, I was supposed to be in Australia now.
Oh, really? Already?
Yeah. We should have gone 5 days ago, but we didn't fancy Novak's journey, so we decided to stay at home. Actually, no, because we're vaccinated. But there you go. It was just the each state in Australia has different regulations, and it would have still involved a 2 week. Would have had to quarantine for 2 weeks over there.
What's so crazy over the fence in a different sport in cricket in South Africa, the cricket had to be played in empty stadiums, but it was 38 degrees in Cape Town on Saturday, and the entire Western Cape, like 4 million people, were on the beaches. So the beaches were literally, it was just people everywhere.
It's like ants.
Literally like ants, but no one could go to the cricket.
But that goes back to the original lockdown when we went through the very first one where it was baking hot in England for the first time. And literally every beach in Cornwall was just rammed with people. And you're going, but you can't, the pubs are shut because you can't go in for a drink.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
Madness.
Yeah.
And then
you got a last minute call up on the first weekend, kind of back into action.
Yeah.
You were in?
So I went up to Manchester. So our game v Wasps was called off.
Mm-hmm.
So that freed me up on this. Not that I was playing, obviously. But
you've kept that under the radar.
I was going to say.
Yeah. No, but obviously I've been helping out and trying to get involved when I can at Loughborough. So I went up to the Sale Exeter game and did some of the Prem 15s coverage, which was cool. I arrived and it was hammering it down and the entire journey up. So I wasn't too hopeful, but actually stayed dry for the entire game. So that was something.
So it happens when you're Emily Scarrett, you walk out of the car and
So we were in the commentary position. Yeah, that. And so we were on the stand where nobody else is. The fans are on the opposite side. Jason Robinson walks around. Hi, guys. Just chatting, you know, catching up, whatever. And then he was like, the actual reason I've come around is I just wondered if you want a tea or coffee. And then at half time, bless him, he came back with three teas, three waters, three pies, pulled some sugar out of his pocket. Just what a good bloke. What a good bloke. I know. So good.
Jason Robinson, if you're watching this, if you want to hang around Fulham on a Monday, you know, we'd love to, you know, have a coffee
as
well.
Actually quite desperate, parched right now. Jason
It's so good. Such a nice bloke.
Yeah, he's a ledge. Yeah.
Brilliant.
And you were off doing bits, weren't you? BBC gig?
Yes, I was in Edinburgh and the sun shone on the same day that I was in Edinburgh. I know. I took the good weather with me. No sunglasses, though, so I was sitting there squinting. But also, sadly, no fans. So I was the only person to enjoy the vitamin D that came streaming onto my skin.
Yeah. It's sad, isn't it, that we're back to that Wales and no fans in Wales and Scotland. Hopefully it gets sorted for the Six Nations.
There's plans
afoot, but hopefully, the more we talk about it, the more pressure it puts on to allow fans in those stands.
Put it on the agenda, please. I mean, Edinburgh now leads the United Rugby Championship log for the first time since 2009, and their fans couldn't be there on Saturday to see them clinch the top spot. So,
it's rubbish, isn't it?
Yeah.
Such a pity. But we do have rugby being played, and we get to go and watch this rugby and call it work, which is always really nice.
Love the way you did that.
Yeah, I do sometimes still like kind of look over my shoulder and go, has no one figured out that this isn't work yet? But I'm really appreciative. The headline of the weekend, however, unfortunately, out of the Prem 15s, or is it unfortunate, is that massive scoreline at the expense of DMP. Emily Scarrett, where do you stand on this?
Look, it's really hard, isn't it? I don't know if you saw Nick Heath's tweet, because I think he was covering the game yesterday. I often agree with Nick Heath, to be fair. So I thought he was pretty spot on. I think it's, you know, they need support in the north of England, and that's not trying to pity them, or it's not trying to suggest that they're not working hard and they're not trying hard, because all of the above are definitely true. But for some reason, the rugby and that kind of the north of England is and has been struggling for a little while. And I think, you know, we see it in the men's game. There's such a brilliant population of people and rugby players and sports people up there that, you know, we want it to be competitive. And I suppose from a league point of view, you always want every single game to be super competitive, or at least, you know, not a massive walkover, like obviously 104-0 quite clearly is. You can't dress that up in any other way, unfortunately.
How does the budget work on the individual teams in the Premier 15s?
So is it
like owner based, and then the owners put money in?
Yeah. So I think there's a salary cap. There's not a salary cap in force this year, but there'll be one next year. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that all the clubs will have the ability to reach that, even if they wanted to.
Well, that's the same as the men's game. You know, obviously it's shifted from 7.5 down to 5 or whatever it is now for the next 2 years, but not every club hits that.
Yeah.
Poppy Cleal tweeted, it's not great. The league isn't perfect, but I tell you what, the team is every reason I started playing rugby. Thanks for the game.
Go on.
Oh, I just, maybe this is because I was supporting the South African women's team when they were up in the north recently. And you know, even before they took off and Cape Town, that they're not going to come here and win. That's not the point of the exercise. They were coming here to gain experience. But it's different when you're a national team. When you're a club side and you have to put in all of that work, and as you've heard all of these stories of players who have day jobs and then play rugby, it does make you wonder how sustainable that is. And that's what worries me, is how you keep attracting talent to a team when this is the kind of scoreline.
Yeah.
But with it being so relatively isolated up there, the you know, if girls want to play rugby, there's not, you've got a massive drive down to probably Sale is the closest. So, you know, you're basically trying to dive in on the local talent, but then obviously if they are getting beat that heavily, are you going to recruit the talent? It's a double-edged sword. You're hoping that they're watching England games and going, I still want to get into it, whatever. And you know, don't lose motivation, but that's going to be the hardest thing, isn't it? Keeping that motivation.
Your point there is exactly why I don't think anybody is questioning their commitment to what they're doing, because if anything, their commitment is probably greater than most people's in the league, just because of where they live. And every away game is flipping miles away for them, and it's a huge time commitment. Every, you know, it's a full Saturday gone, if not more than that. So, you know, there's never a question over that. It's just, yeah, you've got to, and Mike, you might have more experience of this than me, but you've got to somehow change something like that, because it's not going to happen in small steps, I don't think.
No.
You need probably some cash. You need to attract some, you know, proper players, internationals from wherever, and then all of a sudden it starts to become a bit more attractive to others. And I'm not sure.
It is really difficult. I mean, you look at, you know, Newcastle have gone through little circles of life, but you know, ultimately when they were in their pomp when we turned pro in 97, Hall or whatever it was put so much money in, and you had Dean Ryan up there, you had Rob Andrew, Wilco was up there, you had Tuigamala, you had all these names, you know, won you a title, but ultimately, it's still quite damp and wet up in Newcastle, same as Durham. And you know, how many fans are going to come and watch you in what is just a football hotbed? It's got everything against it, and it's how do you crack that? And it's not easy, but you need clubs like that. You need the diversity of allowing people to be able to play rugby wherever they are. Mm. It's just how you then can then package it and sell it. Because as you say, long journeys, probably going to get every game knowing that you're not going to win. It's a difficult one. But as I say, you've got to give massive kudos to the girls who keep turning out and still playing and still wanting to play and wanting to get better. And it needs some help. But I don't know where the best place to start. Yes, it's easy to say more cash, but that's...
We're just, short term, isn't it? Yeah. You've got to find something sustainable.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. You've got to have something in the north. You can't just... It's not as easy as people saying, or, you know, perhaps they shouldn't be in the league or whatever, but then you're isolated. No, it doesn't solve anything.
It takes another club out of the league. It takes more players not playing at that standard or getting that exposure. So you're never going to get any uplift in terms of performances and upskilling of players. You still learn every time, even if it's a painful lesson, you are still learning every time you play. But what is the best answer? I'm not entirely sure.
The interesting thing for me is Durham as a university, I think,
either
Newcastle or Northumbria as a university, they have a really strong women's program. Same for like Edinburgh and Glasgow. In terms of the Buck stuff, which is like the top tier of university rugby, they're in the Premier League, if you like. So there's something obviously that isn't quite then transcending through in terms of, or up, I suppose, into the Prem rugby.
Do they lose their talent to bigger southern clubs?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Or I suppose maybe the problem they've got is how you turn the tide now, because the league is getting stronger, it's getting better. Every club is improving in terms of their infrastructure, in terms of their resources, in terms of what they're putting out on the field. So, you know, back in the day when I played for Lichfield, we went through a couple of rough seasons where you weren't winning a huge amount, but the league was of such whereby nothing much changed. Do you know what I mean? Nothing much changed. So it was just a case of sticking together, working on X, Y, and Z, and then you got a couple of good runs at the same time. Whereas now the league is just steamrolling ahead. And how do you stay with that when you're probably not with it at the moment?
Yeah, it's a bit like Ruby Tui's tweets where she said if women's rugby was an NFT, she would buy it right now because that ish is going to grow. Well, let's see what DMP does. They play Bristol next. And on the topic of Bristol, shall we welcome our guest?
Let's do it.
One of the fastest players to have ever played sevens rugby. She's pure gas, double Olympian, Wales international, and year one and two teacher. Jazz Joyce, welcome to the good, the Scaz, and the rugby. Why did you do a little giggle there when I said your name? Are you surprised? Do you think
no,
I was talking?
Just the year one and two teacher. I mean, I don't know if I can call myself that yet, but we'll see.
We're not here to talk any rugby. I'm just here for life lessons on how to manage Mia. So, Jazz, right? When they don't listen to you constantly, how do you deal with that?
Just be on their wave, be childish, play games.
I should be able to do that. That's basically my life.
Are you doing anything else at the moment? I mean, are you speaking?
No, that's what I should be doing. I'm just going to play games.
Okay. Well.
But they don't like it when the parents do it. When other people do it, they get all on board with it. When you do it as a parent, they tend not to listen to you.
It's because you're not cool.
Because you, yeah. You probably try and win.
All right,
time.
All right.
Yeah. Don't
jump in there. Jump in there a bit quicker about me not being cool. Thanks a lot.
But seriously, how far off being a year one and two teacher are you then?
3 weeks.
Okay, well, that doesn't count. I mean, yeah, it's under a month and you'll be a year one and two teacher.
Yeah.
Excited?
Yeah, I am, to be fair. Like, after obviously being full-time for the last year, going back to placement now reassures me that I do want to be a teacher when, like, rugby kind of doesn't go anymore.
That must have been a bit of a shock to the system, though, no? Like, being a full-time rugby player. We all know what that's like. It's quite nice. It's quite a nice lifestyle. And then
it really was. Like, my alarm this morning was at 6:30. So I went to the gym in the morning and then went to school, well, 8:20 till, let's say, 4 o'clock, and then come home, cook dinner, and then here I am.
You are.
Well, we're really...
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
No, my pleasure.
After a long day wrangling year ones and twos, from what I hear, they do require a bit of wrangling. So what is it about teaching that you then enjoy or get satisfaction from that day?
I think it's just enjoyment from like being childish with them, as silly as it sounds. Like, I just enjoy having fun, playing around with them, trying to do loads of stuff outdoors. But yeah, even doing like math, science outdoors, getting them outdoors, I just love teaching them, I guess. And coaching and stuff like that.
It's really interesting. If you had to teach, would you go for the littlies or would you go all the way to the other end of the spectrum?
That's a very good question. If I was talking about coaching rugby, I would always go to the older age of the spectrum, 15 plus. But I think there is still a lot of fun to be had coaching or teaching 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds.
I did some primary PE once when I was just out of university, and that was little ones, probably like Jazz, and they just, it's fun. As long as you appreciate that they're not going to listen to you, they're probably not going to learn anything, they're not actually going to do what you say, but if you can just facilitate the madness, it's actually a lot of fun. And maybe that's what it is. It's not teaching, it's just facilitating.
How many different ways can you hop in different positions?
Beanbags, we're a winner. Bet you got a load of beanbags at school.
Yeah, they love it. Balls, spots, everything.
And is it at that age where if you have one or two kids in the class under control, it's almost like the rest follow suit, or does that not apply?
Yeah, no, because those characters count at that time. There's still people be followers of the cool kids.
I don't know. Jazz will know better than me, but I just found that if there was one that did what you said, they were the teacher's pet, inverted commas, and everyone else was like more the norm. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel
Scaz is describing herself.
No.
If you've got one that doesn't listen or two, the class just gets disrupted because then everyone then will follow them. So that's what I've found. I taught year four before Christmas, and that's what I found in year four. But I've obviously only just come to year one and two now. So I'm hoping that's not the case.
What would you want to go into once you've qualified properly?
Younger ones, even like as young as nursery and reception. Yeah.
Life in the sandpit.
Yeah.
I can loan you Lena for a good week if you want.
Fine. I'm in. It'll come at a charge.
Yeah, you're expensive.
Yeah.
So you do the Diddy rugby, the Littlies rugby head coaching as well as the coaching, well, getting them through school during the week. You literally cannot get enough.
No, so I don't actually coach during DD Rugby, so I just kind of like manage it. So I've got coaches that coach the children during that, but I do, when I have more time, want to go down and actually coach and do stuff there, because that's more, it's 45 minutes of fun rather than like 5-6 hours of teaching. So I do want to do more stuff in that, but at the moment I've got coaches doing that.
How's it going? Because that's pretty new for you, isn't it, the DD Rugby stuff?
Yeah, really new. Like when did we take over? We took over just before Christmas. So yeah, December. Yeah, really good. So the person I took over from, Robin, she just didn't have time kind of to, not to run it properly, but to give as much effort she would have liked to have, to kind of build the business. So at the moment, just basically playing rugby. Me and Alicia, my partner, so both have a lot more time to give to building the business and getting a lot more people, a lot more children, well, active and getting a rugby ball in their hands as early as possible.
Are you seeing a change in terms of the little girls that now come play? Have you seen the impact at that age group, that the profile that women's rugby is already enjoying, having some, moving the needle?
Yeah, definitely. Maybe not at that age, because DD Rugby is 18 months to six. Maybe not that age, but definitely say seven, well, even six plus. You definitely see, yeah, change of impact and kind of the profile we bring. Social media is massive, telly is massive at the moment for us, so as soon as little girls see that and kind of remember who people are, they're like, oh my god, she's on telly. But yeah, the change is massive, because when I was younger playing rugby growing up, you didn't have anyone, not that we didn't have role models, but we didn't have anyone to watch on telly. Like, I guess Twitter and Instagram do so much for rugby players at the moment, because you get to actually know them as a person rather than just a player as well, and all the podcasts, like everything like that, that gives us the publicity is growing the game massively.
Diddy Rugby's class as well. Have you taken yours to anything like that? Because I've been involved, because it's Vicky McQueen, isn't it, who runs the whole gig. I've been to a couple up in Leicestershire, because they're all over the place depending on where they're being run. The kids just love it. It's such good fun. There's a couple of videos where the little girl's like, oh, I just really wanted to run around with a rugby ball. Or boys, it doesn't matter. It was anybody. I think the parents probably end up having more fun sometimes than the kids, bless them.
But. Yeah, we've got rugby tots down by us, but we haven't got diddies. But yeah, Mia just ended up going to Minchinham.
You've just sworn at Jazz by saying a competitor name.
Sorry, Jazz. Is there one near my area? Minchinhampton actually had an introduction to girls on the weekend, and some of the Gloucester Harbury girls went there.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
There you go.
Yeah, and you kind of, hopefully, if you're not reaching the kids, then hopefully you're reaching the parents that encourage them to kind of get out there and participate and kind of take up the opportunity. You started playing at seven. I Googled the place that you are from. It looks... it's basically in the sea, right?
Yeah, literally, I live at the end of Wales, basically on the sea, yeah, St. David's. So it's, yeah, furthest west as you can go, pretty much.
And it
is a city in Britain.
Smallest city. I was looking, I couldn't figure out whether it was a national park or if there are actually...
People live there.
It was very green on Google Maps.
Yeah. Had a great night out in there, actually, St. David's, I think.
Brilliant.
Nigel Davis, who used to coach Gloucester, that's his haunt, and we had our coaches meeting in St. David's. Yeah,
brilliant.
Pubs don't kick you out. It's all good for me.
Yeah, well, unless COVID plays a part.
Oh well, yeah. This was very much pre-COVID. I was playing, so it was in black and white.
So, being from St. David's, did that require a lot of driving? Basically, everywhere you just kind of always factored in an extra 2-3 hours into wherever something happened.
That's just a civilization, and then you've got to
just at any shop, really. No, definitely. Like when I started playing, kind of like further away than St. David's, so Halford West and stuff like that. My parents had to drive me, so the closest club then was 45 minutes away from me. So my parents to drive me to that, wait around and then come back. It was massive for them to do that. They had to take time off work and things like that. So for them to do it is brilliant. And I definitely wouldn't be playing rugby for Wales and all sorts of teams if they wouldn't have taken me places. And 45 minutes was the closest trip they took. So they did take trips up to when I played for Wales. It took, 2.5 hours to get to Cardiff. So 2.5 hours, 3 times a week. Is mental.
Wow. Because you've made so many headlines because you've gone back to essentially amateur rugby from being literally one of the people who lit up the Sevens series, which is, I mean, just such a tragic reality check about sometimes how we move forward and then we take steps back again in this industry. But you have been kind of going the extra mile in a very literal sense from when you started playing rugby. So are you just taking all of this in your stride?
Yeah, definitely. We only dream of being a professional rugby player when you're younger. Especially when we were younger, we didn't kind of have the aspiration of being a full-time athlete, full-time rugby player. So for it to be finally put in place for us is fantastic. And I think post Rio, that's when I struggled the most, was kind of going to Rio, spending a full year being full-time. And then I actually had to go back to university then. So that was kind of the hardest hitting. Whereas now, coming off the back of full-time Tokyo and stuff like that, it's not too tough because I can go back into kind of being full-time and stuff like that. But it's tough, I guess, to probably not be playing back on the world stage on the Sevens. But hopefully I'll get that through the World Cup.
It's mad, isn't it, that? I mean, I'm sure I definitely know Jazz's opinion on it, but for the girls to be part of GB in Rio, then kick back out into their unions, then come... I know COVID played a huge part in it, didn't it, this time around, but come back as GB, do really well again. Obviously, it's heartbreak, but it did really well. And then get kicked back out into their unions again. Players like Jazz, the Scottish girls, so many players now that are able to step up on that stage. And because I think realistically, probably prior to Rio, you probably didn't have the wealth of players across the other nations to potentially play on the world stage. That was the reality of it. But certainly now it's completely different. But now they don't get that opportunity. And it's, again, it's probably not a question for Jazz because I think I know her opinion on it. And obviously she's the one caught in the middle of a lot of it. But it's really tough.
I think the hardest part for us, like speaking from different nations, so Scottish and Welsh, is that the fact we don't get the opportunity to do it. So like, obviously I lived the dream last year of playing the World Series, got to play in Olympic Games. And then I guess you come back to Wales, and like, I love playing for Wales, love playing in the Six Nations Autumns, but I love Sevens just as much as 15. So with Sevens, we don't really get much exposure from that. So I guess I get a tournament a year. So a tournament every 4 years where I get to play on the world stage as a Sevens player, because obviously with Wales, we are in like Rugby Europe relegation. So we play teams who aren't the best in the world. So it is really tough that we don't then get the opportunity to play week in, week out. Like, well, obviously the English girls now are going to Spain in end of January and I'm in Wales. So.
Wow.
Would you look at the American League? Would you fancy a bit of that? Because that looks like it's potentially going to be pretty cool, isn't it? Obviously, I know you've done bits before overseas.
Yeah, like my friend went to the Australian one whenever prior COVID was, and she said it was brilliant and she loved everything there, like the coaching, the players, and the setup there. So definitely would look to go over there, but it's just so tough because when's the right time to go over, especially with Wales and Korea? Can you get funding for it? Can you get paid when you're out there? So there's so much aspects. Because I potentially look to go to Japan as well, but it's just knowing when the right time is to go, really.
That's interesting. Did you enjoy Japan that much? Is it just the opportunity to play?
Yeah, different country as well. I went to Australia and did that for 4 months, which was brilliant. But I think Japan is a different country, isn't it? Different culture, different atmosphere. So I think to go there and travel it and play Sevens, I think, yeah, it would be brilliant.
It's where the cash is at the moment, isn't it, as well?
That is. I didn't want to say it, but
it
is also, I mean, if you're going to go live somewhere else, that is an extreme shift in terms of lifestyle and culture and everything is just, it's so different.
A bit different to St. David's.
Definitely a bit different to St. David's. But I think we travel the world playing rugby, but we don't travel the world, if you get me. Like, we're away for 2 weeks, but we actually only get, say, 4 days off to go and explore. So you're not actually traveling the country. You're just there playing rugby effectively. So Japan is definitely a place I would like to go and explore as a traveller as well as then play rugby out there.
It's great. It's one of the best countries. That 2019 World Cup, and we were fortunate to go up and down it. And it's got everything that you want. You don't need to go to bed in Tokyo, and there's really nice places in Kyoto, and then there's, you can almost, if you've got tattoos, you can get in fighting places in, where were we even? when Hask was, these guys kept, Hask's obviously got quite a few tattoos. And every time he'd go near a door, the bouncer would just go, mate, you don't want to come in here.
Really?
And he's like, okay. And because Hask had been there, he knew that meant that you don't want to go in there.
Yeah.
Because they class tattoos as you're part of a, like, oh, not yeah, a clan or a
gang.
You're part of a gang or whatever. So he was just like, no, come in here. Hask's like, okay. He said, that's what you got to get used to. Don't get argumentative about it. Just go find somewhere else.
It's been tough for him.
Yeah. Did you guys get up to anything when you were there for the Olympics? Or were you just so COVID kind of caged in your little athletes' village?
Pretty much. Like, we had a holding camp in Yokohama, maybe. I don't know, somewhere in Japan. I think it was called that. So we got to explore a tiny bit then, but not like massive amounts. And then as soon as we were in the village, then we were in the village for the rest of the games. But even being in the village, you still got to experience like the culture of Japan. Like we had heated toilet seats.
Oh, best.
Insane. I love that that's part of their culture. Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. The best.
But like the toilet seats
around.
Were insane. And then you got like buses as well. They weren't being driven. They were just, you had like buttons and they just go. So it was cool that we got to see stuff like that part of their culture, but no, we didn't get to go out and explore.
Did you guys as the athletes just have like big old parties once your competitive stretch wrapped up?
Pretty much, yeah. So
there's like an official and an unofficial answer to this, isn't there, Jazz?
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely had a party after. A lot of us have worked 5 years for that effectively. So it was, yeah, like obviously we didn't do as well as we hoped, but I think putting 5 years into something, almost a relief when it's over. You're like, okay, I can now like have a drink, I can eat a chocolate bar. I'm extreme within that anyway, but I could relax. I think I've actually just stopped relaxing now after Christmas. I'm like, okay, I'll get back to rugby now.
Are you like anyone I know that's fast? You just love, you actually get faster on chocolate and crisps. James Simpson Daniel, who I used to room with, he had a Monster Munch sandwich before he'd go to bed and then a bar of dairy milk. And I'm like, if I eat that, I'm just going to get fat. And he gets leaner. Like, really annoying. You're a bit like that. You strike me as that could be your, you just run faster on sugar.
No, I'm quite good at disciplining myself as in eating. So I can't comment on that, no.
Can't reveal either way whether I do or whether I don't.
So what is the naughty thing that you've kind of afforded yourself for the last 6 months then that you didn't do for the 5 years prior in terms of food?
Well, alcohol was definitely one. I literally don't think I must have drank once in the last 5 years, like not even exaggeration. Yeah. So due to COVID.
Sorry, Elma can't process that at all.
Yeah, I know. COVID obviously played a massive part in that. So for the 2 years of COVID, like I just didn't. There was nothing to do, and I don't enjoy personally having just like a drink at the house, so I wouldn't do that anyway. But post Olympics, I have genuinely been drunk the entire time. not even joking. Like, I went to Prague like post Christmas, and we were literally drunk for the whole 4 days. And I've never done that, but like yeah, it was brilliant, and I proper relaxed.
I've never done it either. Yeah. So.
Tins can't relate at all.
I've been in Prague over New Year's, and I have to say it is the single drunkest night that like we had, the friends that were there. I've never seen my husband that drunk in like almost 2 decades. It is the kind of place where you can have that.
Did you just go straight into embrace the culture, straight vodkas? Like, was it all quite hard from the start, or did you build? Yeah. So that's the problem, isn't it? Go to a country that can drink vodka for fun, and you go, I can do that.
Yeah.
No, I can't. Next day, no, I can't.
An hour later.
Next thing, you're speaking languages you didn't know that you could speak. You're like, there are only consonants here. I don't wait. Those, yeah, I have no idea what I'm saying. I'm glad to hear that you did cut loose and have some fun, though.
Yeah, I really did.
Does it still
I'm sober now?
Hi, I'm Jazz. I'm 4 days sober.
Teacher Jazz has sobered up just in time for a placement.
Yeah, it's been good.
Would be interesting going into the kids. Hi, kids. Yeah, not a good first day, that is it.
So you came back from you came back from Japan, and then you basically wrapped up the seventh season in Dubai. What was Dubai like?
Yeah, I've been to Dubai to play for Wales before, but it's just a different level playing in Dubai on the World Series. We didn't have crowds for the first kind of tournament, but for the second one, we had crowds, and it was insane. The crowds in Dubai are mental, and the place had, well, been in lockdown for however long. Sevens hadn't been a thing for 2 years, so the crowds there were, yeah, if you've been, you kind of would know what it's like. But again, another thing on top of the crowds and kind of Sevens being back was first time I really got to play on the circuit. So again, that was, again, another great experience for me. And I'd love to do that day in, day out, play on the circuit, travel the world, but at Wales just aren't there yet.
I literally feel like this is a bit like Alicia's like crowdfunding thing. Like, surely there is something we can do. Surely there is a something we can sign, something we can do online.
A variance team on the circuit.
Yes.
Yeah.
The best players of players who aren't on the circuit.
You've spent some time thinking about this already, I can tell.
Because there's so many deals out there, yeah, from different like nations, like South Africa. So, like, not just kind of UK, but so many girls out there who, so teams come on the circuit as an invitational team, and you watch girls, individuals light up the circuit there, but same with them, they're never going to get the opportunity to play on that circuit because their like country just isn't good enough or doesn't have the funding, which sometimes happens.
Okay, Dragon's Den pitch. Give us your, call up your team, the Jazz Joyous Barbarians.
We're in.
That would be class, to be fair. I can't remember the girl's name, but there was an absolute flyer from Papua New Guinea who tore up every time they got on the invitational scene, but obviously struggled in the team and that they had, and they appeared like once a season or something daft. But I really do think, I've been thinking about this, but I really do think they need to do something different with, like, and I think you need to separate the men and the women because they are totally different. Obviously the men, Scotland, Wales and Ireland all compete on the World Series, whereas obviously the Welsh and the Scottish women don't. So why can't the women be GB? Because it's not going to affect the teams. Scouts, sorry, Jazz. I have no say in this. This is just my opinion.
Scares for president. Scares for president.
But it's definitely have contacts. You can sort this out, Scouts. Definitely have people.
But it's different, isn't it? I understand if you make the men GB, it obviously has, you know, a knock-on effect to the amount of teams in the series, blah, 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 blah. But for the women, it's nothing.
Oh, I don't, you just...
And that's very commonsensical, and I appreciate that word, commonsensical. Yeah. Sounds good. I appreciate there's, you know, much more behind it than that, but you've got to treat them differently. And at the moment, they're just grouped as sevens.
Agreed. Great idea.
Speaking of great ideas, Wales gave contracts to women's rugby players, and there was a lot of fanfare and celebration when the news came out. When did the news come out?
I was fortunate enough to be one of the 12 contracts that have come out.
Yay!
Yeah, zero so surprise.
Living the dream of a professional rugby player again.
So when do you start? Like, do you all come together? Do you know the format? Like, what's...
Monday. So Monday is where the girls started, but I won't start for the next 3 weeks because I'm finishing my placement. I could postpone my placement, but I already postponed it for the Olympics. So it's a year later already. And if I postpone it again, I won't end up doing it. And then post-rugby, I'll have nothing. So I need to finish my degree 3 weeks and then I'm free.
Smart decision, I'd say.
Yeah.
Love that for you. Teacher Jazz is going to be back just playing some professional rugby.
Yes.
So are you all going to be based at the Vale? Are you all coming together like 5 days a week or?
Yeah, 4 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, with exceptions potentially, I think, of Friday. And then club Tuesday, Thursdays, and then play on the weekend then, which is brilliant. And I think it's important for them just to let us play club because that's where we're getting better. That's where we're also learning so much from coaches, players around us. Like we have, many of the England Red Roses with us as well. So we're learning loads from them as individuals. So yeah, it's brilliant. Looking forward to starting.
Awesome.
Yes, for that.
Yeah,
and you guys are kind of all playing for these southern kind of Prem 15 sides anyway. You guys are kind of within reach enough?
Yeah, we're all playing in England, you mean? Sorry.
But I mean, in terms of the Prem 15 sides, you guys are relatively kind of concentrated. Bristol, Gloucester.
Yeah, Bristol is the closest to us, with then potentially Gloucester being the next one, then Worcester. But Bristol is, 2 hours from my house here, so... And I think it's like 2 hours 45 to Gloucester, and that's the next one. So I love Bristol, but sign and it was the most convenient for me. But I would never leave Bristol now. Not because
it's still a long way, isn't it?
Because I love it.
Yeah, still a really long way.
It's a four-hour round trip, but then we don't start. We don't actually start training till 7:15. So then we don't actually leave till I think it's 9:15. By the time we've had 2 meetings and stuff, and then we don't get home till 11:15. Shower, bed, and then obviously I'm up at 6:30. But that's only going to happen for 3 weeks. So and then I'm fine.
Wow.
But that's the reality of, you know, Jazz is lucky that she's only doing this for 3 weeks longer now. But there's a hell of a lot of girls.
12. Yeah, there's only 12 of us who are lucky enough to do that. You've got the rest of the 40 Welsh girls who I'd probably say about 10 of them are teachers who will do the same thing as that, and if not further, because they're traveling even further. So yeah, it's mental what they have to do, but things are going up in Welsh rugby. 12 contracts, it's got to start somewhere.
Yeah, positivity, it's going somewhere. Hopefully it'll keep growing and expanding.
Hopefully.
Big year, isn't it? World Cup. Got World Cup to come. So there's, you know, there's a lot of things whereby you guys will be, obviously the 12 of you coming together, but the extended squad as well. There's a lot of stuff to look forward to, definitely.
Does that give 100%. You massive motivation for those days where you are getting home at 11:30, midnight, and getting up at 6, and there is that World Cup that you're shooting for, and it's all paying off to be over there and then competing?
Yeah, definitely. And for a World Cup to be in New Zealand, I think that also is striving people to want to go there. It's a brilliant place, a pinnacle of some people's careers in the 15s setup. So yeah, people want to get there. It's been a long 5 years with it obviously being postponed. I think potentially some girls would have retired after World Cup, so they're hanging on as well. So not hanging on, I mean like...
Name them.
They should have retired ages ago, those lot.
Yeah, they're like, well, they've given an extra year of kind of a lifestyle, say 6 in the morning till 12 at night. So I think they're just, really excited for that to come and to be finally played.
I can tell you who's hanging on. It's the partners and the family members and the support structure, everyone around them that are kind of hanging on for this.
So true.
Do you worry about the group or are you excited by the group? Obviously, Australia and New Zealand, it's not the easiest. Is it? Do you get excited by that though? Because obviously...
Really excited because we don't play teams like New Zealand and Australia. So if we pulled a pool like England and France, I think for us, we never get to play any of those teams. So I think it would have been like...
Roy Rise.
Yeah. Even though we'll beat England this year, do you know what I mean? No, it's brilliant. And like you say, is there an easy pool? Probably not. And New Zealand and Australia, they're going to be tough. And the fourth seeded team we're going to pull is probably going to be tough as well, potentially Scotland. So like that in itself, they're all going to be tough games. But yeah, really excited. And especially the year we're going to have as a squad, I think we're only going to get better, potentially not at New Zealand's level. They've been full-time for however long, but definitely striving to go out there and do better than we did last time.
Okay, well, congratulations on your contract, even though this feels like the worst kept secret in all of rugby. And best of luck with 2022. And we're really excited to see you get out there and perform and entertain all of us who love watching you. Jazz Joyce.
Thanks, Jazz.
Thank you very much.
That's it for the good, the Scaz, and the rugby. Make sure that you join us next week when we will be chatting to someone Jazz has gone toe-to-toe with a few times.